It's 7:39 a.m. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. My name is Edward Yurish. This is the Tuesday Morning After. And with us in studio is Chris Zekand, who's here to present.
I'm here to, I don't know, because it's nice being here. I'm not presenting. You can just push the button. I don't have to do anything.
Instead of being sitting at home sitting alone at home at his coffee table with a coffee listening to the show, Chris Zekand is here.
That's a dystopic vision.
I have no idea what...
You haven't seen my apartment.
Right. Well, but yes, Burning Man is coming up.
Yes, it is. We've been running the series of discussions with various burners, wannabe burners, and veteran burners about their experiences. And this is the one coming up, I think, is probably of the four of them, my favorite.
Why is Burning Man worthy of the attention of our audience?
You're a burner.
Because this is a vanity piece. Everybody's listening to this show is interested in me, and I'm interested in Burning Man. That's why. No,
you're pushing the buttons. Which way? There, it's the sort of thing. Whereas I wouldn't take it to that extreme, but you suggested. Mm-hmm. I said, why not? What the hey? Let's go do it.
I think actually Burning Man is like an experiment, a social experiment, partly mm-hmm. is what it is. It has 10 principles by which it seeks to align itself.
Although they're given that, what, it's now like 25 years old?
It started in like 89 at
so 20 then. Years. Okay, I'm off by 5 years. Sorry. But it is the sort of thing to me I would just, I don't know, I respectfully disagree with it being an experiment. To me, it is now part of the landscape. It is a function. Anytime you can get 50,000 people out to the desert all at one time, you do have a organization, you do have a bureaucracy, you do have a vision and an idea.
But I think it started as a kind of, well, part of it was a laboratory. Like, let's see how people are when they align according to these principles.
That I agree with, and it is the sort of thing where, to me, it's the ones that I'm most intrigued with that I'd like to delve into and find out more about further are the regional events and the differences between the regional events, how the stuff that happens in the Thousand Islands differs from the ones that happen out in Nova Scotia, differ from the ones that happen out in Oregon or in Texas or where have you. Because to me, from having spoken to Kay, who I think... No, I'm not going to remember now who's the one who told me most about the regional events, but it is a sort of thing. Those, to me, sound like what you were saying, the experiments and the laboratories mm-hmm. and trying to do new stuff and sort of recreate things that have not been created before.
Well, I'm especially interested in like the concept of decommodification is a main one that I like that there's no commerce mm-hmm. during Burning Man. Radical self-expression, the notion that like you are the art. There's no show to go see. There's no art to go. Everybody is the art. The art is always happening. And radical inclusion, that anyone who is there is accepted. There's a whole set of 10 principles by which people function. But let's listen to Chaos.
He's one of the what is it, coordinator, local coordinators?
The regional representative.
Thank
for
you.
That's Eastern Canada.
Cool.
So he's a very articulate and interesting person, and we will listen to him now.
I have two names, okay? Nathan Taylor is the name given to me at birth by my parents. But I go by K, which is K. Orson Sweaver, which I go by increasingly these days, actually. It's, it was inspired by Are You Serious? And the producer of Babylon 5, who actually registered a name with the Directors Guild, which was Ibeen Scoon, which was the name that he insisted be used in the credits when they started pulling stuff on him. So I realized that pseudonyms that sound like real names, but that can be twisted, are a lot of fun. K. Orson Sweaver, you shrank the Orson down to just an O. I'd like to make it a more interesting meetup. I'd like to make it a meetup that's got a real emphasis on what people need to know and do to get prepared to go. I think a lot of that is happening tonight, but to have something where people can actually say, you know, make it a little bit more formal as to informing people of things they might not know. Because there are things that people need to know that might not get said tonight just because they're not interesting, but they're important. Like, If you're going to take pictures of naked people, get permission first. I read about it initially on an internet website called Disinformation, which still exists. It's in a slightly different form than it was when I first was on it, but yeah, it was a website called Disinformation. And I found it interesting, and then kind of forgot about it. And then I took a wilderness first aid course. And at the very end of the wilderness first aid course, one of my classmates pulled out Burning Man brochures and said, "I'm a ranger at Burning Man. We need more EMS people this year. We're running short. You guys have all been trained on wilderness emergency survival, so if any of you are interested in coming, I've got all the info." And it was just like, okay, I've already heard of this, and now somebody's giving me a brochure from my class. Okay. Their criteria have changed over the years. Like, things progressively change in terms of what they need. This was in 2002, so I think you might have gotten a ticket, but I don't remember for sure. But also, nowadays, you have to be a paramedic to be on the medical team, because they have enough interest that they can go for paramedics. They don't just need people who have got advanced first aid. I mean, the initial thing was just the art, was that it was a community of artists who had the ability to do whatever they wanted. So that was kind of the appealing thing. I was like, yeah, this sounds like fun, I'll go check that out. And then when I got there, I realized, I mean, my perception of it changes every year that I go. So it's kind of hard for me to rewind and think and say what I thought it was back then. I think the art really arrested me at the beginning. That was the it was the most inspiring thing, was the art initially. Because some of it is on such a grand scale, or some of it is just so audacious, and it's like, I mean, some of it's genuinely dangerous. Like Dance Dance Immolation, yeah, where they shoot fire at you. And so for a couple of years, that was kind of the big thing. But I mean, you also realize that you're meeting people who take more responsibility for their lives. Because, I mean, it's prerequisite to go out there. You have to be able to take care of yourself, because no one's going to take care of you. Because you can't buy anything, you can't, you know, there's no services provided except for bare minimums. So there's that attracts people. And then they're all interesting, open-minded, artistic type people. So then the people kind of started drawing on me. And I think it was in 2007, which was like my fourth year maybe? Third or fourth year, the gift economy really came out. And I think the gift economy is huge. Because there's no money. There's no money there except for ice and coffee, which are just kind of whatever. You need ice, and coffee is just a luxury that caffeine addicted psychos will pay for. But just the idea of having this community and this economy where there's no money, people just give things to each other. And their reward is the results of that gift. So if you give something to somebody and they like it, that's your reward, that's your payment. So, and it, yeah, no, it's not even just tangible, you're right. Yeah. Performance or kindness or like helping somebody catch their dome that blew away in a storm. You know what, in the city, if somebody steals a car on your street, you don't go help that person, or, you know, most people don't. But out there, if something happens, people are just in a much more, they're not suspicious, and they're much more selfless. And so in the last couple of years, that's what's really hit home for me. You know, in the beginning, it's the art and just the size of it. But after a while, I don't want to say you get numbed to it, but you come to expect it. You're like, oh, it's two giant trucks on top of each other in the sky, whatever. I don't care. But that, exactly, it's like being there, done that. I've seen something 10 times that size last year. But then you see two people who don't even know each other doing something, you know, like helping each other out without anybody asking for help. And you go, that's not normal. That's not what you see in your day-to-day life. That's a really beautiful thing, and that's something that, and it sticks with you. I find it's very, I'm a much more giving person in the default world, which is what we call life outside of Burning Man. I'm a much more giving person, and a much more accepting person as well. Because people often, you know, if you're giving something to somebody, sometimes people get suspicious and they wonder what the associated cost is. And I've found some resistance to that when I've like gifted something to somebody and they're like, oh, what do I owe you? Like, no, you don't owe me anything. I just gave you something. It's a gift. Because I'm a representative, I know what some of the rules are behind a regional event has to abide by the 10 principles, which I can't quote. I can quote probably 7 out of the 10. Yeah, radical inclusion, radical self-reliance, radical self-expression, no commerce, leave no trace,
no spectators.
Kind of run out there. But anyways, it has to abide by those 10 rules, and they have to prove that they abide by those 10 rules. They have to, and then just simple things like they have to have insurance, they have to have a good relationship with their local community. You know, they're not breaking any local laws. Or Black Rock City, which is the city that Burning Man creates to hold its event, Black Rock City is the city where people always say yes. So when you're sitting around with your friends, you've had some beers, or maybe you've smoked something, I don't know. But somebody says, wouldn't it be a good idea if? In Black Rock City, people say, yes, you're right. How much rebar do we need? How much PVC do we need? We'll get the propane from this store. And before you know it, it's actually happened. Yes, let's. Keith Johnstone. It's the whole city is kind of that game just played out en masse, where people say, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could drive around in cupcakes? And then the next year they show up with little cupcake mobiles. Wouldn't it be great if we could build an art structure 200 feet tall and burn it? And then the next year they'll do it. It's where people, you know, accept whatever challenges come to them and they figure out a way to do it. And that's one of the most amazing things. You know? Every time you've ever thought, oh, that would be a great idea, and then somebody goes and does it. They don't. And the expense that some people spend probably tens, even hundreds of thousands of dollars on their art or on their camps. And they don't get any money back for it. It's just, that's their gift to the community. It's really, like, awe-inspiring. Like, last year, somebody built a skyscraper. It was 10 or 11 stories tall. It's not like they got any money for that. It's not like they could sell it anywhere. They just built a modular skyscraper, built it in the desert. People climbed up and down it for a week, and then they tore it down. It's a combination of things. There's, people self-select and apply. As I recall, I applied. Yeah, so you apply, and then they send out a survey to the community so that they can get a feeling of what the community thinks of the applicants, and then they do some telephone interviews. I don't know exactly. It's a combination of all of the, it's based on a combination of the phone interview and the information they got from the people in the community, and I think they also just look at your experience because they want to know if you know enough about the culture and the community. I've only been one of the organizers since about December of last year, so that's like 7-8 months, because the former people in Montreal left because they had 2 kids and jobs and too much stuff to do. They're busy. They're very busy. There's not, I mean, I take it on, I frequently take it upon myself to kind of to connect people, or like to plug people in. That's one of the things that I really enjoy doing, is just taking people who don't know each other and putting them together and seeing what they create. Yeah, I have to there's disseminating information. That's a good one. And hand in hand with that is kind of welcoming new people and making sure that they're included and that they have access to the information that they want to get. Because there's a lot of people, you know, it's their first time and they don't know what they're doing. They just need a little bit of a push in the right direction. There's not, it's definitely a very non-hierarchical thing. I mean, the very name of the position is regional contact. And so most of what I do is just make sure that correct information is disseminated, and that kind of the standards of the community are upheld, which is, so far in Montreal, it hasn't been an issue. I know some other communities where there's a lot more people and there's a lot of frequent activity, it's more of an issue. Montreal is a little bit more subdued, so people don't cross the line. You know, people don't do things that are really stupid. which is good. What was I thinking? I do feel more ownership of, and I really hate to use the word, but it's kind of a buzzword that's used these days, and I hate it, but of the brand, because there is like kind of an identity that goes with the word, it's Burning Man. And there's a self-conscious, there's kind of a consciousness of, if somebody is using those words, are they using them authentically, or are they using them kind of for personal gain? And if somebody's using them for personal gain rather than in the original spirit, then that bothers me a lot more now than it used to. Last year the theme was the American Dream. And a lot of people didn't like that theme. And I went anyways, whatever. And I kind of, especially doing some kind of research, or maybe not so much research, but paying closer attention because of that theme. Like, I think when the theme is announced, you just subconsciously start paying more attention to that theme throughout your daily life, because you're thinking about it. And with the American Dream as the theme, by the time I got there, I had thought about it enough and picked up on enough things, and I was starting to think, you know what, this is, Burning Man kind of is what America was supposed to be like. It was supposed to be a place where you were accepted regardless of your race, age, religion, whatever, and where you were supposed to do whatever it is that you wanted to do without restriction. So Burning Man is kind of more America than America is in a lot of ways, which is kind of funny. I think the biggest thing is that they have a... they only started doing them recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, but they have what they call a regional summit, where they invite regional communicators, regional contacts. They invite the people who are from wherever, across mostly North America, but a few people from other countries as well. And we all went to San Francisco in March, I believe it was, and had a meeting, and people showed what they were doing in their local communities. And, you know, there were sessions for people to enhance their, you know, communication skills or their management skills or legal issues, whatever it was that was important to people. And I saw and met, like, some of the people that I met and some of the projects that I heard about, I really started to feel like, this isn't a party. This isn't an arts festival. This is a genuine kind of movement that includes its own ethics, it includes its own culture, and it encapsulates a lot of different things, and a lot of different people are bringing it to their own cities and countries in their own way, and seeing how, like, for instance, in New York, they rent out Governor's Island for a weekend every year, and they turn the entire island into a free arts festival. And in Detroit, they built a temple in one of the worst slums. They built a temple that the community now protects. Like, the local community, these people who would normally be, you know, stealing things and vandalizing, they really respect this place that they helped build. And, you know, there's people who do relief work. And I have friends who were doing relief work in Peru with a whole bunch of other people, burners from Burning Man. And I... seeing things like that happening in other places really, really cements that bond. You say, wait a minute, this isn't a party. You know, yes, we party hard and we have a lot of fun, but when we get down to business, we get down to business and we get stuff done. And seeing that stuff and hearing those stories really humbled me and made me feel like, you know what, this is, you know, build the party. And bring in those people and then plug those people into these other things that they can do to make the world a better place. And a lot of them go for it. And a lot of them, you know, they take the same skills. Because living in the desert, you know, bringing everything that you need with you, living in the desert, you have to be a resourceful and tough person. And you take those skills and you take those abilities out into the world with you and you say, I can do this. I can rebuild that house. I can throw that fundraising party. I can do this. So it's a really empowering thing for a lot of people, and that I kind of feel like that's more of my role now, is to empower other people for whatever it is that they want to do to enhance their world. So.
And that was Montreal Regional Burning Man representative Chaos Weaver, giving us his views on take on Burning Man.